Hello everyone, welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger for Tuesday, July 20th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Another warm day, a warm sunny day in Fort Dodge. Glad to have you listening as always. We got some warm sunny weather coming up. It's going to get warmed, that's a new word, warmer and more humid, thus warmed as the week goes on. We'll take a more in-depth look at a forecast, a long-range forecast, as usual when we close our time together. Camp Winoki is the first story in the Messenger. They're going to host a beekeeping program. Webster County Conservation Board is holding a fireside chat on beekeeping from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Camp Winoki. Guest speakers include Berta McCollum and Amy Cinerong of 8th Avenue Honey. They will discuss interesting facts about honeybees. There will be an optional hike following the program. The program is free and open to the public. Bring a camp chair if you are able. For more information, contact Karen at khansen, S-E-N, at webstercountyia.org. Floyd is coming to home. The Floyd of Rosedale sculpture is to be set up in Fort Dodge today. That's not too far from where I live, and I'm going to have to go check that out before the night's over. A prodigious porker is about to take place of honor in Fort Dodge. The massive pig is a steel sculpture of Floyd of Rosedale, a Fort Dodge hog who became famous as the symbol of the football rivalry between the University of Iowa Hawkeyes and the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers. The sculpture will be set in place today at the intersection of 10th Avenue North and 32nd Street. That location is very close to the site of the former Rosedale farm where the original Floyd lived. The sculpture project has been in the works since 2019. About $125,000 was raised for the project. No tax money was used. Artist Dale Merritt of Mount Vernon was commissioned to create the likeness of Floyd. The sculpture of the pig is very similar to the Floyd of Rosedale trophy the two universities battle for every year. The sculpture is 14 feet tall, 15 feet long. City Councilman Dave Flattery, who has led the project, said the sculpture was eased out of the building where Merrill assembled it with just a half inch of clearance to spare. The sculpture made its public debut last weekend in Solon during the community's Beef Days Festival. That's ironic, that's my word. Flattery said the sculpture was placed on a trailer and was a parade float with the theme, "Missed the memo, where's the beef?" He said the float won first place prize in the parade. Flattery said part of the intersection of 10th Avenue North and 32nd Street will probably be closed while the sculpture is put in place. He said a crane will be used to lift it so pigs can fly. The sculpture will be on the northeast side of the roundabout intersection. Initial plans call for it to be placed in the middle of the roundabout. The new location is considered a safer one that will give people the opportunity to see the sculpture up close. The origin of the Floyd of Rosedale tradition can be traced back to a 1934 game between the University of Iowa and University of Minnesota. All-American running back Ozzie Simmons, one of the few black players in major college football at the time, was a Hawkeye. The players from Minnesota singled him out for some brutal hits on the way to winning the game. In the run-up to the 1935 game between the two rivals, Hawkeye fans were boiling with anger, and Iowa Governor Clyde Herring suggested that the fans would take action if the referees didn't put an end to the attacks on Simmons. To cool things down, Minnesota Governor Floyd Olson bet Herring a live hog on the outcome of the game. Minnesota won the game 13-6, but by all accounts it was a clean game, and the players from both schools complimented each other after it was over. Herring, however, had to pay up. He turned to Alan Loomis, the owner of Rosedale Farms, just east of Fort Dodge, for a hog. He named the pig Floyd in honor of the Minnesota governor. From our files is listed next. This goes back to July 2006. It's a picture of Mackenzie Beam as she holds on to a bunch of gladiolas purchased by her grandmother Beverly Beam of Fort Dodge at the farmer's market. Mackenzie, in this photo, is 4 years old. News of record is listed next. Magistrate court for Monday includes public intoxication. Matthew Williams, 28, of Manson, fined $180.75. Accessory to a misdemeanor, Genesee Lynn Sankey, 25 of Fort Dodge. Hearing set for August 6. Eluding Landon Matthew Makison, 23 of Fort Dodge. Preliminary hearing July 28. Driving while barred Landon Makison, same preliminary hearing July 28. Douglas Dwayne Owen, 39 of Fort Dodge. Preliminary hearing set for August 6. Possession of marijuana Landon Makison, 23. Hearing for July 28. Interference with official acts, Landon Makison, 2 counts, continued 180 days. Devaris Jamal Shivers, 17 of Fort Dodge, continued 180 days. Possession of drug paraphernalia, dark window or windshield, disorderly conduct, 4th degree criminal mischief, assault on persons in certain occupations. Landon Makison, preliminary hearing set for most of those charges for July 28th. Fraudulent use of registration, Douglas Owen, 39 of Fort Dodge, continued 180 days. No insurance, Mr. Owen also continued 180 days. He's 39 of Fort Dodge. Operating while under the influence, first offense, Jason J. Westerhoff, 48 of Manson, preliminary hearing set for August 6. Speeding, Jason J. Westerhoff, continued 180 days. Assault, Craig Edward Collins, 54. Of Farnhamville, a hearing set for August 20th. Fireworks violation, Craig Allen Studevant, 27 of Fort Dodge, fined $770. Fort Dodge police logs from Friday include 5 domestic calls, civil problem, 1400 block B Street West, unknown problems in the South 7th Street and 4th Avenue South area, and in the 10 block of South 11th Street. A suspicious vehicle, in the 500 block of North 22nd Street, a car accident in the 3000 block First Avenue South. Fraud was reported in the 2900 block of 5th Avenue South, a nuisance in the 300 block of First Avenue South. Unknown problem, 1100 block of Williams Drive and the 1000 block of 25th Avenue North. Suspicious person, 2200 block of Elmhurst Avenue. A sexual assault was reported. A hit and run reported in the 300 block of South 9th Street. Unknown problem in the 900 block of South 22nd Street, a burglary 1200 block 7th Avenue North, a car accident 2100 block of 2nd Avenue North, a civil problem 1500 block 27th Avenue North, harassment 700 block 1st Avenue South, car accident Lanesome Avenue and A Street, suspicious person 1200 block 3rd Avenue Northwest, suspicious person 2000 block North 15th Street. On Saturday, 4 domestic calls were reported. An unknown problem near Prospect Avenue and South 15th Street. Burglary in progress, 600 block North 23rd Street. Unknown problems, 10 block of North 10th Street, 1400 block of 4th Avenue South. Water problems were reported near Martin Luther King Drive and 10th Avenue North. An unknown problem in the 400 block South 14th Street. Juvenile problems, 900 block South 18th Street. Suspicious vehicle, 700 block North 18th Street. A strange odor, 800 block South 14th Street. Criminal mischief, 700 block North 23rd Street. A hit and run, 1200 block South 22nd Street. Unknown problem, 300 block 1st Avenue South. Hit and run, 3000 block 9th Avenue South. A runaway, 300 block of Avenue M West. Juvenile problems reported near South 7th Street and Meriwether Drive. Juvenile problems, 300 block Avenue M West. Criminal mischief, 600 block North 16th Street. Hit and run, 2200 block of 15th Avenue South. A noise disturbance in the 1800 block of 5th Avenue South. A burglary, 300 block South 21st Street. Hit and run, 1100 block South 32nd Street. Hit and run, reported in the 100 block of North 14th Street. A runaway, 300 block Avenue M West. Theft, 900 block South 18th Street. Criminal mischief, 600 block North 23rd Street. Fireworks near 1st Avenue North and North 19th Street. And shots fired, 300 block South 31st Street. On Sunday, 3 domestic calls were reported. Criminal mischief, 1900 block 3rd Avenue North. Unknown problem, K Street, Avenue B. An assault, 1300 block 6th Avenue South. Juvenile problems, 400 block South 14th Street. Criminal mischief, 10 block South 25th Street. A car accident, 8th Street Southwest and 9th Avenue Southwest. Theft, 900 block South 19th Street. Suspicious vehicle, 200 block North 15th Street. Hit and run, 1300 block South 23rd Street. Criminal mischief, 1200 block South 24th Street. Theft, 10 block North 25th Street. Also the 3100 block 5th Avenue South and the 1100 block of Avenue B. Runaway, 300 block Avenue M West. Suspicious person, 1200 block 7th Avenue North. A car accident, 500 block North 9th Street. A fight in the 1500 block of North 24th Street. Another fight, 1300 block 3rd Avenue North, and an intoxicated pedestrian reported in the 2900 block of 5th Avenue South. That's the Fort Dodge police logs for last Saturday and Sunday, and magistrate court report. The city of Eagle Grove was in a little bit of hot water with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources earlier this summer. According to an administrative consent order between the city and the DNR, DNR staff conducted an inspection of the Eagle Grove Wastewater Treatment Facility in August 2020. During this inspection, inspectors found that Prestige Foods of Iowa, a, quote, significant industrial user, was, end quote, was in violation of its treatment agreement with the city, and the city was in, quote, substantial noncompliance with its nitrate effluent limit, end quote. According to Eagle Grove City Administrator Bryce Davis, the issue is mainly with the wastewater treatment facility being unable to treat the pre-treated wastewater sent to it by Prestige. Davis said the city's National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, N-P-D-E-S, permit with the DNR is for 1,900 pounds per day of max loading of effluents like nitrogens, solids, ammonia, nitrogen, and more. Under the city's NPDES permit, the city discharges treated wastewater to various drainage ditches which ultimately flow to the Boone River. Prestige's agreement with the city allows the pork processing plant to send the city more than 1,600 pounds per day of total Caldol nitrogen, or TKN. He said Prestige has been sending an average of 1,200 pounds per day of TKN, so they've been under their permitted levels for that. The problem that we face is in order to treat TKN, you have to have a carbon source, Davis said. Prestige, with their pretreatment, is an anaerobic lagoon system. It's basically a DAF, which is dissolved air filtration. Then it goes into a decanter to remove some solids. Then it goes into an anaerobic lagoon system before it gets sent to us. That pretreatment focuses solely on carbon, Davis said, explaining that carbon is also later needed to treat the nitrogen and nitrates in the wastewater once it gets to the city's treatment facility. The Prestige plant is also required to send the city wastewater treatment plant 2,800 pounds per day of biochemical oxygen demand, or BOD, B-O-D, and it has been sending, quote, much less, end quote, Davis explained. The BOD is needed to treat the TKD in the wastewater down to an acceptable level. To compensate, Eagle Grove has added supplemental carbon to its plant to raise the ratio of BOD to TKN concentration. We've worked well with Prestige, Davis said. They've streamlined their flow meter, which is basically sending us consistent flow over the week, which makes it easier to treat consistent water and get consistent results. Prestige has also added a second decanter, which has reduced the solids in the wastewater, which has saved the city on the back end from having to remove those solids, Davis said. The wastewater treatment facility also had an aerator that was not working correctly, which contributed to its noncompliance with the DNR, the city administrator said. Though the administrative consent order was signed June 8th, the city had solved the issues and had been in compliance for about 2 months by that date, Davis said. Everything is fixed right now, and we anticipate it to stay that way, he said. And we know what we need to do to move forward to ensure that it stays that way. Unfortunately, it's going to cost money, and it's going to take time. As part of the administrative consent order, the city is also required to pay a fine, a $5,000 fine to the DNR. The order also requires the city complete construction of necessary upgrades to the wastewater treatment facility no later than January 3rd, 2023. Murder defendant Damien Lamont Chavez, 21, has accepted a plea deal from the Webster County Attorney's Office. Chavez pleaded guilty to one count of second-degree murder Tuesday morning in Webster County District Court. He was set to go to trial today for one count of first-degree murder and one count of first-degree robbery for the October 2019 shooting death of Sioux Falls man Mohammed Yaquab. Under the plea agreement, the state amended the murder charge from first degree to second degree and dismissed the first degree robbery charge. If Chavez had gone to trial and was convicted of first degree murder, he would have faced a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole. Chavez will be sentenced on August 25th. A second degree murder conviction carries a maximum prison sentence of 50 years, and Chavez will not be eligible for parole until he serves at least 70% of the maximum sentence. An additional article is expected in Wednesday's newspaper. A Fort Dodge home sustained heavy smoke and heat damage, but no injuries were reported in the fire. There's a picture of a Fort Dodge Fire Department firefighter holding open the door to the home at 203 7th Street Northwest to evacuate some of the smoke after the fire was put out Monday evening. Fire crews were called to the home around 5:40 p.m. for a fire that reportedly started in the oven and spread to the cupboards above. No injuries were reported. From the article, thanks to some quick thinking of an off-duty firefighter, a small kitchen fire in the northwest area of Fort Dodge was prevented from spreading to the rest of the house. The Fort Dodge Fire Department was called to 203 7th Street Northwest around 5:40 p.m. on Monday, according to Fire Captain Steve Teske. The fire started in the oven and spread to the cabinets above. Teske said firefighter Kyle Porter, who lives nearby and was off duty at the time, heard the page and recognized the address in his neighborhood. Porter arrived before the fire trucks and ran inside to close doors in the home to isolate the blaze and cut off oxygen to the fire. The home's occupants and a pet guinea pig were able to escape when the fire started. No injuries were reported. The house sustained severe smoke and heat damage, Teske said, but there was no structural damage. A man was arrested for driving while intoxicated Monday afternoon after a rollover accident just south of Dayton, southeast of Dayton, sent one person to the hospital. According to Webster County Sheriff's Office Deputy Corey Wood, the department was called out to an area near 380th Street and Sampson Avenue shortly before 1:30 p.m. for a report of a Dodge Durango SUV traveling at a, quote, high rate of speed, end quote, on a gravel road that had lost control and rolled into a ditch. No other vehicles were involved, Wood said. There were only, quote, very minor, end quote, injuries reported, he said, but one person was transported to Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center to be checked out because of previous injuries sustained by that person. The driver was arrested for intoxication, Wood said. It is unclear what, if any, charges will be filed against the driver, who was not identified. Dayton Fire Rescue also responded to the accident. A Fort Dodge man has been sentenced to more than 17 years in federal prison for pleading guilty to conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine. Russell Gentry, 32, pleaded guilty to the charge on January 7th in the United States District Court, Northern District of Iowa, and was sentenced on July 14th. According to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Gentry admitted that between January 2020 and late July 2020, he and others distributed more than 25 kilos of meth in the Webster County area. Law enforcement executed a search warrant on his address in July 2020, seizing 15 pounds of meth with each pound wrapped individually, $3,700 cash, and 2 ounces of marijuana. Officers also seized drug trafficking paraphernalia, including packaging material, a digital scale, and numerous cell phones. Gentry has admitted that he intended to traffic the meth that was seized by law enforcement. Gentry was sentenced to 210 months in federal prison, after which he must also serve a 5-year term of supervised release. There is no parole in the federal system, He's being held in the United States Marshal's custody until he can be transported to a federal prison. The case was investigated by the Iowa Division of Narcotics Enforcement, Webster County Sheriff's Office, Fort Dodge Police Department, and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation Laboratory. There's a picture in the Messenger. The title of the article is Paving the Way. Dust billows around machinery on 8th Street between Central Avenue and 1st Avenue North Monday afternoon as crews from Fort Dodge Asphalt prepare to resurface the street. The company has a $907,000+ contract for repaving various streets around Fort Dodge this summer. Timber is the title of the next article. As consumers wait for the cost of lumber to come down, prices have soared to all-time highs. There's a picture of Scott Otto. He's an estimator and sales manager at Beiser Lumber. He stands next to a stack of lumber on Wednesday. Otto has retired from the company after 21 years of service, his last day being Friday. His last year working for the company was the most dramatic as lumber prices shot through the roof. Demand was high while there was a shortage of material throughout 2021. The phenomenon was one of the many fallouts from the COVID-19 pandemic. From the article, in his final year of working at Beiser Lumber Company, Scott Otto got quite a shock when lumber became one of the hottest commodities in the country with prices soaring to all-time highs. The strangest part of all was spring of 2020. Economists were predicting a recession, said Otto, an estimator and sales manager. Our business took off. It did the opposite. Otto's last day at Beiser was Friday. He worked 21 years for Beiser. Prior to that, he worked at Payless Cashways for 18 years. During 2021, Otto watched his prices soared and supplies were hard to come by. The main effect we have seen is shortage of material, Otto said. Extremely high prices and it's harder to source materials, harder to find them. COVID's effect on labor force has impacted the entire supply line. Joe Kaiser, Fort Dodge branch manager for Beiser Lumber, said an increase in the amount of people working on their homes during the pandemic was a huge factor in the demand for lumber. That's kind of what drove the price up, was everyone was working at home, doing work, and that created a shortage, Kaiser said. COVID affected every facet of our life, which we had no idea would happen. From January 2017 to June of 2021, the cost for a framing package for a 1,700 square foot ranch almost tripled, according to online information. August of 2020 was the big jump, Kaiser said. That's when everyone was at home from COVID and the material was becoming extinct. Demand was very high and supply was way low. Transportation of goods also largely contributed to the price hike. Earlier this spring, an average of 30 container ships a day were stuck outside the ports of Los Angeles, the Wall Street Journal reported. That has also led to delays in not just lumber, but a variety of other products. Experts say COVID-19 caused the backup. With more people at home, people began ordering more products online. Additionally, many of those items are not made in the United States. Shipments peaked in February when 177 container ships carrying more than 800,000 containers arrived at the Southern California ports, the Wall Street Journal previously reported. That represents 41% more containers than what arrived at the same time in 2020. From ports to warehouses to distribution centers, each get overwhelmed with cargo. The longer it takes, the more it costs, and the cost is passed on to the consumer, according to the experts. And the cost keeps adding up on land, Kaiser said. Fuel costs being up, trucking costs, rail costs, he said. Otto said shingles were hard to come by in the spring of 2021. Shingles was a big one, he said. In 2020, we ordered 40 truckloads of shingles for the entire year. This spring, our supplier said we would only have 10. In terms of lumber, Kaiser said pricing is starting to tame, but the future remains unclear. The market goes up fast and comes down slow, in my experience. It's been extremely crazy. I've been doing this 40 years, and we have never seen what happened this year. Kim Beiser, the owner, has been doing it for 50 years, and he's never seen anything like this either. We have seen ups and downs, but never the extreme climb like this. Mike Doyle, owner of Doyle Construction, said lumber prices have slowed the new housing market down. His firm builds between 5 and 6 houses a year. He's working on 3 right now. The houses we are building now, we started them before the big price increases. We buy all of our materials at the time of the order, not as we go. Our prices are locked in, so we got lucky. Anything new, everything went up. A board that used to cost you $3 costs you $12, and that adds up in a house. And in terms of acquiring other building material, Doyle said the wait has been nothing short of a pain. I'd order material and couldn't even get it, he said. We waited 3 months before siting. We couldn't do any work at a house for 3 months. That's all kind of coming out now. The price is leveling off, too. Cost of about everything is seemingly higher in these times, Doyle said. Everything is more money. Plastic is higher. Siding, it's all gone up. Pella windows are really expensive now, and it's a long wait to get them. Doyle said when workers at sawmills became ill with COVID, that also slowed production. When those workers were out for 2 weeks, that slows everything. Lumber is hard to get anyhow. It was bottlenecked for a while, but I think it will clean itself up. Kaiser said it could still be a while before the Beiser lumber becomes cheaper for the consumer. Otto believes normalcy is on the way. At the mill level, lumber prices have gone down quite a bit, he shared. I would think by next year building season, it would be a more normally priced season. Riley Bleem is the new executive director of the Calhoun County Economic Development Corporation, CCEDC, the county recently announced. Bleem, who will focus on economic development, tourism, and historic preservation, grew up in Rockwell City and is raising her family on a farm near Manson. As a resident of Calhoun County, I look forward to being a resource for our communities, existing businesses, and prospective businesses and industries, said Bleem, who knew her new role on June 21st. For the past 8 years, she has worked in various positions within higher education, including Economic Development Assistant Director for Iowa Central. I am excited to bring the knowledge from my position with the college to Calhoun County to assist local businesses and industries and help them grow, she said. She also has a background in marketing and experience working for an abstract company. Bleem holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Buena Vista University and a Master's in Science from Fort Hays State University. She replaced Jill Heisterkamp, who resigned in June, to pursue other opportunities. New economic development opportunities are taking shape in Calhoun County. A June 3rd groundbreaking ceremony marked the beginning of a construction on a new 115-acre business park being developed at the intersection of 4-lane U.S. Highway 20 and Highway 4 just north of Rockwell City. This is the first business park to be located in Calhoun County. It's also one of the first to be built along rural Highway 20 since the 4-lane highway expansion project was completed in 2018. We're excited to welcome Riley to the CCEDC as our new executive director, said Keaton Hildreth, president of the board and chief executive officer of the Calhoun County Electric Cooperative Association. Riley will be a great asset to the county and its communities as she builds on the momentum created within our organization during the past several years. When you see her out and about in the community, I encourage you to introduce yourself and share your thoughts and ideas with her. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will turn to today's obituary page. Jody Marie Halverson. Jody Marie Henshaw Halverson, 63, of Fort Dodge, died July 19, 2021. Jody was born January 5, 1958, in Columbus, Wisconsin. She later moved with her family to Okemos, Michigan, then Lincoln, Nebraska, before settling permanently in Fort Dodge. Jody received a BA in special education from the University of Northern Iowa and a Master's of Education from Viterbo University. Jody taught special education in Keokuk Public Schools for 2 years and Fort Dodge Public Schools for 38 years and was passionately involved with Special Olympics. Jody was known as a caregiver to all, as she never hesitated to help someone in need, whether it's a family member, friend, student, neighbor, or co-worker. Jody loved walking with her boxers and friends, cheering the Chicago Bears, golfing, traveling, especially with or to visit family, and spending time with friends. Jody is survived by Bernie, her husband of 25 years, daughters Tricia Bobin, Carrie Seaman, Stacy Newman, brothers Don Henshaw and Drew Henshaw, sister Paula Moyer, numerous grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents, Donald and Mary Henshaw, of Fort Dodge. Visitation is Wednesday, July 21st from 3 to 5 p.m. at Gunderson Funeral Home with a memorial service to follow at 5 o'clock. A celebration of life will be held following the memorial service at Ride's Banquet Center. Harlan Ely. Harlan Ely, 85, a lifetime resident of Fort Dodge, had his prayers answered Saturday, July 17th, to go home to heaven. His exit took place in the same room at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home where his daughter Jacqueline died 2.5 years ago. Precious, valuable in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints, according to Psalms 116:15. He is survived by his wife, M.J., of 60 years, two grandchildren, and three great-grandchildren. Harlan was a member of Faith Baptist Church. He served in the military. He was employed as an orderly at both Webster County Home and Friendship Haven. After retirement, enjoyed both the people and workouts at the YMCA until the virus scare discouraged that. Private burial will be held in North Lawn Cemetery. He and MJ request no service or visitation. In lieu of that, encourage spending time with your own loved ones while you have them. From Pocahontas, James Abrahamson. James F. Abrahamson, 79, of North Canton, Ohio, formerly of Palmer, died Tuesday, June 8th. Memorial services will be Friday, July 23rd at 10:30 at Hope United Methodist Church in Pocahontas. Burial to follow in the Summit Hill Cemetery at Pocahontas. There will be no visitation. Powers Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Belmont, Gail Wegman. Funeral services for Gail Wegman will be 11 a.m. Friday at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Fort Dodge. Visitation 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Friday. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that is the conclusion of today's obituary page. There's a letter to the editor entitled Hero of the Cruise Says Thank You. And this is a letter that was sent in by retired Colonel Rich Lennon. To the editor, I would like to thank Casey, Deb, Matt, and Abigail Johnson for all they do to keep the Fort Dodge Ford Toyota Jamar Cruise Night going and growing. It is clear that the Johnson family goes above and beyond in preparing for and hosting the cruise night, from clearing the lot to make room for all the vehicles to arranging for food and vendor trucks to serve the attendees, and I'm sure many other details the public is unaware of. It is truly a first-class event and brings people to Fort Dodge from all over the state. Starting with the most recent cruise night on July 2nd, the event has started honoring a veteran for their military service in support of our great nation. The honoree is referred to as the Hero of the Cruise. As the inaugural Hero of the Cruise, I would like to personally thank Casey and his family for the work and effort that went into honoring me for my military service. It was clear that Casey had done his research, especially when he mentioned a car that I had owned over 50 years ago that had slipped to the back of my mind. Even though there are definitely more deserving veterans who could have been honored as Hero of the Cruise, I feel honored to have been in this role for the July cruise and look forward to the next cruise as you again honor a veteran. Again, thank you for all you do for this community. And that is from retired Colonel Rich Lennon, United States Army, and he lives here in Fort Dodge. There is a column from Joni Ernst, the Republican senator from Iowa. Cuba serves as a reminder of the dangers of communism and socialism and promise of America. That is the title of the column. Last weekend, Cubans from across the island nation, from Havana to Santiago, took to the streets, rising up against the communist-run government as they faced the worst economic conditions in decades. While the Cuban people have long suffered under authoritarian rule, the COVID-19 pandemic has only exacerbated their hardships and further revealed the abject failures of socialism. Immediately, videos of the demonstrations flooded social media. It's been inspiring to see the people of Cuba reject generations of dictatorship and demand liberty. And in many of their hands, they carry the ultimate symbol of liberty, an American flag. While some people in this country may not agree, the American flag represents hope, opportunity, and freedom, not just within our borders, but across the world. The principles of democracy represented by our stars and stripes are what the Cuban people deserve to have, too. Here in Iowa and across America, we hear the calls and stand united with these men and women in their fight for liberty. The movement being led by the courageous people of Cuba also serves as a stark reminder of the dangers of socialism and communism. These repressive ideologies have failed every time, and in Cuba they've led to 62 years of corruption and poverty. The sad reality is many in the Democratic Party ignore the evidence in front of them of what communism entails. Instead, they continue to march towards the far left and promote socialism or socialist principles right here in America. During my time at Iowa State University, I attended an agriculture exchange program in the Soviet Union. I witnessed the devastation of socialism and communism up close, and I immediately realized how truly grateful I was for the many freedoms offered to me as an American. I spent my life defending our American ideals in uniform and now in the United States Senate. Now it's important for the United States to stand with the Cuban people who yearn for the same basic human rights and democracy that we enjoy. Three historic demonstrations mark a turning point. The Biden administration must be steadfast and clear in this support for the Cuban people. I'm hopeful the men and women of Cuba can chart a new path forward, one of liberty and opportunity. And again, that's a column from Joni Ernst, the United States Senator from Iowa. Let's go ahead and flip over to the sports section. The Ayala brothers are making the most of the Fargo experience. Drake is back in the finals, and Drew is an All-American. Drake Ayala is on the verge of ending his high school wrestling career as a three-time Fargo National Champion. He will compete in the 126-pound final after earning a first-period tech fall over Vince Robinson of Illinois in the Junior Freestyle National Semifinals on Monday. Ayala, who is 171-3 as a Dodger and two-time Dan Gable Mr. Iowa Wrestler of the Year, has had great success at Fargo. The future Iowa Hawkeye is competing with his brother Drew for the first and only time here. "It's bittersweet," Drake said, "this being the last tourney with Drew. It's definitely starting to sink in." Drew reached the short list of Dodger All-Americans at Fargo on Monday, earning a seventh-place freestyle finish at 100 pounds. "It was a good experience," Drew said. "I didn't get what I wanted, but I have other chances to come back and win it. I just had to put in the work to do it, but the All-American status feels good to have." Drake, who earned a 32-second fall in the quarterfinals, will now look to go back-to-back in Fargo. He meets Logan Frazier of Indiana in the championship. Ayala, who is a three-time state champion for Fort Dodge, also won a Fargo crown as an eighth grader, becoming Fort Dodge Senior High's first champion since Joe Zuspan in 1974. "I'm excited for the finals," Drake said. "It's almost time to end this chapter of high school wrestling." Drew Ayala, who went 30-6 as a freshman and placed fifth for the Dodgers, was 5-2 in the tournament. He beat Carson Walsh of New Jersey on criteria for seventh after rallying from a 6-2 deficit. The wait is over for the Fort Dodge Dodgers softball team. Fort Dodge again squares off with Bettendorf in the Class 5A quarterfinals. All of the eager anticipation and anxious feelings yield to the real thing Tuesday night as Fort Dodge squares off with Bettendorf in a rematch of last year's Class 5A quarterfinals at the state softball tournament. The top-seeded Dodgers, 35-4 on the season, have prepared situationally in practice pored over scouting reports, watched hours of video, and even become well-versed in mental imagery. Once the game begins at 7 o'clock on Kruger Seeds Field, known as Diamond One, the books are put away and the real test begins. "We've done it all to get ready," said Coach Andy Adams, who has her 12th Dodger team at state in the past 20 seasons. "But it becomes really simple at game time. You pitch, you hit, you play defense, and you have fun. It's a big moment for sure, and we're going to enjoy it every step of the way." Last summer, Fort Dodge blanked the Bulldogs 7-0 to reach the semifinal round for the first time since 2006. Jalen Adams, with a 22-1 record, a .61 ERA, and 193 strikeouts, who fired a two-hit shutout in that contest, will again enter the pitcher's circle for the Dodgers on Tuesday. Coach Adams expects Bettendorf sophomore Emily Rigdon, who is 10-5, to oppose her. "I know what it looks like on paper, and there are some similarities, but overall they're not the same team, and neither are we," said Adams, who won her 700th career game earlier this summer. "That was then, in 2020. It's over, it's done, and it means next to nothing this time around." The Bulldogs graduated 5 seniors and have a couple of 8th graders in their lineup now. "We have different players and a lot of moving parts and new positions. You just can't take too much away from a game that happened almost 365 days ago." Senior Tristan Doster, Fort Dodge's all-time leader for career home runs, is batting .523, 12 home runs, 49 RBI. 8th grader Mariah Myers is batting .460, 7 home runs, 55 RBI. Junior Torrey Bennett batting .456 with 49 runs scored, 35 RBIs. Jalen Adams, .421, 4 homers and 27 RBI, are the other main offensive threats, along with senior Sophia Klinger, junior Maya Davis, and junior Martina Lowry. The Dodgers are batting a 5A best .415 as a squad. Rigdon carries a .486 average with 10 home runs and 44 RBI. Senior Sophia Del Vecchio, who started as a pitcher against the Dodgers last season, is hitting .459 with 10 homers and 45 RBI. Bettendorf has slugged 33 total homers. The Bulldogs, 24-15, stunned top-ranked Muscatine and regional final to advance 7-2. Rigdon and Del Vecchio both went deep. "They're playing good ball, obviously. You don't fluke your way into the quarterfinals. I don't care what their overall record is or anyone else in that field, for that matter. They've all earned the right to be here, and you can't assume anything. We're all here for a reason." The Dodgers have won 29 of its last 30 games. They've outscored their last 13 opponents by a score combined of 157-9, with 12 victories ending by the mercy rule and 11 by shutout. "We're just focusing on the things we can control, keeping loose and staying positive," Adams said. "Honestly, I'm getting out of their way and letting them do their thing. They've taken ownership of this entire situation. It's going to be a tough week, of course, but we're physically and mentally ready. We can't wait to get back on the field and see all the fans who will be there to support us. It means an incredible amount to our program, knowing how much the community has our back. We can't thank them enough." Newell Fonda started their tournament trek with a shutout win over North Butler. Newell Fonda's ability to adjust on the go has them one step closer to winning the third season. The top-seeded Mustangs are 36-4 for the year, and they use their speed and a dominant pitching performance from freshman Kiera Jungers to knock off North Butler 2-0 in a 1A state quarterfinal at Rogers Park on Monday. "We break it down to 3 seasons, regular season, regionals, and the state tournament," said Newell Fonda head coach Courtney Darrell. "We are on the third part of the journey, and after getting past the first round, we just had to finish strong." The Mustangs now face 4th seed Southeast Warren, who are 29-2. On Wednesday at Kruger Seed Field, Diamond One, first pitch is set for 11 o'clock. Coming into the state tournament, the Mustangs were second in Class 1A in triples, total bases, 5th in doubles, 7th in slugging percentage. Against North Butler pitcher Kaya Johnson, the Mustangs had to alter their approach some and find a different way to produce runs. "I give a lot of control to the girls," said Darrell, a 2008 senior high graduate, a former Dodger standout softball player. They know how to read the defense and take what is given to them. If the bunt is there, the girls are able to come up with the big play, and that's what helped us on Monday. Jungers, at 27-3, allowed only 2 hits while striking out 9 and walking 3. Coming in, we just wanted to go after it and use our speed, Junger said. With our speed, we don't have to necessarily win games with the bat. We can do it on the bases. Jungers, who now has 251 strikeouts on the season, didn't allow a hit after the 3rd inning, and at one point retired 9 straight batters. It feels really good to win the first game, and it's encouraging heading into the semifinals. We are aware of how strong the field is, but we just have to keep playing strong. The Mustangs, who are now playing in the state tournament for the 13th time in the past 16 seasons, and 4th straight summer, got on the board early to take some pressure off of Jungers. Bailey Sievers reached to open the contest, stealing 2nd base and advancing to 3rd on a pass ball. Macy Sievers laid down a bunt, a sacrifice bunt, to score the 1st run. The Mustangs' 2nd run came in the 4th when McKenna Sievers had a sack bunt and to plate Mary Walker. Bailey Sievers, Ella Larson, Sophie Stewart, and Mia Walker all had hits for Newell Fonda. Behind Jungers, the Mustang defense was stellar. Newell Fonda came up with a key strikeout, throw-out, double play at 2nd base to end the Bearcat threat in the 3rd. Larson had a diving play as well to squash a scoring try by North Butler. Larson, who has been a part of the last 4 state qualifying teams, was glad to see her squad advance for the first time since 2019. As the 2nd seed a year ago, the Mustangs were upset by number 7 seed Lisbon. It's great to be able to get the 1st win. We know teams are looking to beat us, so we have to come out and play strong, said Larson. Score 4 first, get ahead, and stay ahead. It rolled quickly off the tongue of Southeast Warren sophomore catcher Bria Note Monday afternoon, and in theory it sounds easy enough. It's not, and yet that's exactly what the 5th-ranked Warhawks did in the Class 1A state quarterfinal against 7th-ranked Sigourney on Iowa Central Field at Rogers Sports Complex. Southeast Warren is 29-2, scored the 3 first-inning runs, never trailed, en route to a 9-6 victory over the Savages. The Warhawks advanced to Wednesday's semifinal round against top-ranked Newell Fonda, which blanked North Butler 2-0 in the quarterfinals. Earlham defeated North Union. 5 months ago, Earlham Allie Boyle was told she had a torn ACL. On Monday, the senior catcher helped the Cardinals reach the Class 2A semifinals with a 7-4 victory over North Union at Rogers Park. Grace Porter, Emma Jensen, Cora Boyle, Katie Jansen, Alexis Voss, and Allison Beatty each drove in a run for Earlham, who will face top-ranked Wilton in the Final 4 on Wednesday at 11:30. It feels great to be here, Royal said. When they told me I had a torn ACL, I didn't know what would happen next, so to be playing here at state, it just feels great. Our goal wasn't just to make it, though. Our goal is to win it. The Cardinals scored 4 in the 1st to take an early advantage, adding 2 more in the 4th and another in the 6th. North Union, making its 5th appearance at state in the past decade, rallied, cutting the deficit to 4-2 in the 3rd. Emily Meyer was 2-for-4 with 3 RBIs. The loss for the Warriors snapped a 7-game winning streak, which included a 7-1 victory over St. Edmund during the regular season. An early deficit only served to spark Wilton as the Beavers posted a 7-2 victory over upset-minded Pella Christian on Monday night. With the win, top-ranked Wilton advances to the Class 2A semifinals and a date with Earlham on Wednesday at 11:30. Charlotte Brown, the number 9 hitter for the Beavers, launched a solo home run in the 2nd to break a 2-2 tie, and Wilton added 2 more runs in the 4th. It was great, Brown said. Before the game, a grandmother of a player gave me a hug and said, "You're going to hit a home run," so this one was for her. In the 5th, Wilton's defense turned an inning-ending double play when center fielder Peyton Ganser made a perfect throw to home to stop the runner. After catcher Haley Madlock applied the tag, she fired the ball to Alexis Walker, who tagged another runner out. "We did a great job of hitting the ball up and down the lineup," Brown said. "Sometimes the top of our lineup isn't hitting, and sometimes it's the bottom part. But on Monday, we were all hitting." Pellet Christian, who entered state with just a 17-18 record while competing in the stacked Little Hawkeye Conference, got a 2-RBI double from Natalie Harrell in the first. The Eagles are making their first appearance at Rogers Park since 1990, when head coach Karen Harrell was the starting catcher. A one-tournament field at that time, Pellet Christian placed 10th after finishing the year before 5th. Pellet Christian faces North Union in the consolation round on Tuesday on Dodger Field. Central Springs dominated in their game. The Panthers pushed their winning streak to 13 in a row with a convincing 11-0 victory in 5 innings over Underwood Monday evening. With the win, Central Springs advances to face North Lynn in the semifinals at 1:30 on Wednesday at Rogers Park. North Lynn won their game 5-2. North Lynn has made it a summer tradition to both qualify for the state tournament and make a run at the title while in Fort Dodge. The Lynx took another step toward a third appearance in the championship game, topping Iowa City Regina Monday evening at Rogers Park. Next up for North Lynn will be Central Springs again at 1:30 on Wednesday. Iowa City Regina was 19-13, used up its rally cries in regionals, overcoming deficits to knock both Louisa Muscatine and Cardinal off. The Regals have won 3 state titles in the past decade, hoisting the trophies in 2011, 15, and 17. Wayne got its breakthrough game at state softball on Tuesday tournament on Monday. The second-seeded Lady Falcons are making their third straight trip to Rogers Park after coming up empty the past 2 seasons. Wayne, 24-4, used an 11-hit performance and 11-strikeout outing from Sturley Burnt to turn back Remsen St. Mary's by a score of 7-2. The Falcons will now play third-seeded Lisbon, who beat Clarksville 10-0 in their opener. The semifinal contest is Wednesday at 1 o'clock. Lisbon sophomore pitcher Riley Allgood looked at the scoreboard on Iowa Central Field throughout Monday's Class 1A state quarterfinal contest against Clarksville, but only at her own team's total. She never let her eyes travel upward to see what Clarksville was doing. If she had, she would have known she was working on a no-hitter long before the final out. "I didn't know," Allgood said, "not until the end of the game." In the state semifinals for the 4th consecutive season, Lisbon, 36-8, will tango with second-ranked Wayne at 24-4. The Lions lost to Clarksville in the state semifinals in 2019 and 2020, but leadoff hitter and returning first-team All-State shortstop Peyton Robinson said the team was determined to return the favor. Number 1 Davenport Assumption easily defeated Clark 11-1 in 6 innings on Monday. Their next game will be against the winner of Anamosa or Atlantic at 3 o'clock at Rogers Park, and that's on Wednesday. And the Atlantic and Anamosa game went really late, and I heard who won, but I'll be darned if I can remember who won that game. It went 11 innings. Let's go ahead and get over to the forecast as our time together is drawing to a close. Supposed to get, what was the word I used? Warmed, I don't remember. Supposed to get hot and humid as the week goes on. Wednesday, partly cloudy, high of 68, low of 65. Thursday, mostly clear, high of 89, low of 69. Mostly clear on Friday, 94 for a high with a low of 71. We're talking about some heat indexes over 100 degrees, so please take good care of yourselves and stay cool. Saturday, high of 93, low of 69. Warm temperatures hang on for a while. 92 on Sunday with a low of 68. 90 on Monday, low of 69. A high of 92 on Tuesday. Very, very, very little chances of rain during that time. So, that's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org, and we certainly encourage you to enjoy those podcasts, and thank you for your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay cool, stay close to a fan or the air conditioning, and take good care of yourselves. And we'll talk to you again real soon right here on Iris. Bye-bye for now.